celebrating success, learning from legends, and growing poppies. This is Tall Poppy Talk with Grace Lewis. Kia ora and welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. Today, very excited, special guest, we have Benjamin. We're going to call him Ben Plummer. He is a multimedia journalist with the New Zealand Herald. As a reporter, and I'm going to use those terms interchangeably, as a reporter, he covers breaking news, sports, crime and justice, and no doubt much more when the time calls. Having a passion for sports and community stories, Ben goes well beyond to cover a wide range of topics that speak to locals, whether that's near or far, such as myself. His work has been noted for its detail, accuracy, and insightfulness. Without being pointed to any one side, Ben has a skill in reporting that has seen him swiftly recognised by the New Zealand public, a feat in of itself given the ongoing battle for newsrooms across the globe to maintain their grasp with an influx of misinformation and more. And it was one of his recent articles, actually, where Ben wrote about his own family's journey with tall poppy syndrome and public criticism. So that ultimately led me to him and getting Ben on the podcast today. Shout out to my Uncle Mike. It is such a pleasure, and I have a plethora of selfish questions to ask you, Ben, but welcome to Tall Poppy Talk. My first question is, where and how are you today?
Yeah, that's, first of all, it's quite the intro to live up to. I wasn't expecting that, so thank you very much, and definitely a shout out to Uncle Mike. I'm actually on a bit of a holiday at the moment. Me and my partner at a beach on Waiheke for a few days, so quite the spot. I'm actually looking at the ocean right now, which is quite nice. But yeah, no, doing very well, and excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben, especially when you're on holiday. Now, quite a few of our listeners are not familiar with Waiheke Island. In your biased position sitting there right now, how would you describe it in all its beauty?
Oh, it's, I love Waiheke. I try and come here sort of, you know, every month or two. So it's part of Auckland, but it's also not. It's its own little island, maybe like a half an hour ferry from Auckland. But yeah, it's just absolutely stunning. And when the weather's nice, like it is today, it's pretty hard to beat.
And is home, because obviously you're based in Auckland now, where's home for you?
Yep, so I was born and raised in Auckland. My parents own a lifestyle block. It's probably about an hour outside of Auckland City, down south. So it's nice and secluded, and we grew up there and had to commute sort of an hour to school every day. So yeah, we've always been an Auckland boy, but yeah, now living in the city, which is a bit nicer, but definitely a farm boy at heart.
Oh, and not having to do that hour commute, good grief. That was probably a lot of time to, I don't know, read a book or mess around or whatever else young lads do on their way to school.
Yeah.
And you went to AUT, which is the Auckland University of Technology. I went there for a year, so I feel some kinship towards you that you completed what I started. But when it comes to broadcasting journalism, I personally have like this huge pull towards it. I love the storytelling. And so for you, what drew you into journalism?
Different to most journalists who sort of, you know, wanted to be a journalist their whole lives. I wasn't really sure kind of what I wanted to do out of school. I was actually going to go into something to do with sport and recreation, but my principal at the time told me not to. So I listened and went to AUT and studied communications, still with the idea of not knowing what I was going to do. And then I took a journalism paper and really enjoyed it. So I think it's just sort of grown from there. And I was lucky enough to pick up an internship with the New Zealand Herald in my final year at AUT. Now I'm working there full time. So it's been quite the journey, first and foremost, from not consuming news that often 5 years ago to, you know, it sort of being my whole life. So it's been a crazy turnaround.
And obviously, like, sport is something that you naturally, as you just talked about, like, that's always been part of your life. Your family's heavily into sport. And when you're covering sport versus your other topics, or beat, I think you can call it, do you find you can enter like a flow state more easily? Is there a difference you still notice between sport reporting and crime and justice, for example?
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, whenever I get the chance to report on sport, I get a bit jittery and a bit excited. Now, like you said, sport's been a massive part of my own and my family's life. So I've always, as when I started journalism, I've always wanted to sort of report on sport. And I was actually working in a small paper before I started the Herald, where I had the opportunity to report solely on sport, which was, sort of like a dream come true. But yeah, I feel like it just flows way more easily than perhaps with topics that I'm not super confident in or don't fully know about. But yeah, that's always been the dream to, sort of report on sport, and hopefully working towards that at the moment. So.
Oh, absolutely. I was going to say, it's like you're sharpening your teeth on all these other areas, whether that is crime and justice, community stories, and like the pace at which a lot of those stories need to come out, and you have to be extremely accurate. Like, so I'm a rower, and it's pretty simple, get from A to B as fast as possible. But when you're reporting on like rugby, football, netball, any of those sorts of sports where you can really paint a narrative in the lead up of like, oh, this matchup's happened before. Oh, we know this weak side, like all these things that can be in it. I totally agree that you are refining your skill set so that when you do go full force in that niche of sport, all these other skill sets that you wouldn't know you even needed are going to come in handy. So, granted, it might change in a week's time or a year's time for you. How do you define high performance in this moment?
I think, like you said, it is very much a sport thing, but it can be applied to, I guess, any part of life, really. I think for me, high performance is a high work rate, and one in which you're achieving success and effectiveness, as well as maintaining sort of your well-being, I guess. Like, it's, high performance is a combination of not perfection, but all these things that, brings you together so that you're composed. That's for me anyway, but it is very much a mahi mindset, if you could say that.
I like that. And it's funny too, because for you, like, if you don't mind me saying, before we started, I said, I'm nervous. And you said, yeah, me too, a bit, right? And I thought that was a bit funny because you report literally for your job and you're constantly talking to people to get information, to write stories, and your name is in the byline on articles being published across the nation and world. But then when you jump on a podcast like this, it's a different feeling. Can you talk a little bit about why you think that is?
Definitely different. Personally, for me, I write for my job, so I'm not speaking in front of a camera. I'm not. I have a lot of respect for broadcast journalists who speak on TV, and don't they have to do it all in one take, and they can't mess up, sort of thing. Whereas for me, all I do is write. There's no sort of I'm allowed to think about what I can type and write. And so, yeah, coming on a podcast, it's something I haven't really done too often, and sort of throw myself out there a bit. But no, it's a good challenge, and very grateful.
Well, I'm grateful, thank you, because all right, would you have felt then more in your comfort zone of high performance, right, if I had sent all the questions and you typed and or like wrote the answers back? Would that be where Ben sits at most comfortably?
For sure. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Yeah.
So, in terms of journalism, one of my favorite questions to ask, because you are intimately in the field, right? What are the common misconceptions about journalism, and then what ones are like pretty spot on?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think probably the biggest misconception, in my eyes, is that journalism is dying. I think there will always be a need for news, and especially in a day like in a time like now. There's a lot of misinformation and disinformation on social media, so it's so much more important to have, a reliable source that you get your news from, and I think it's always going to be like that. So that's probably one of the biggest misconceptions, in my eyes. I know it's especially in the industry right now, it's real shaky, particularly in New Zealand. You know, there's especially after COVID, there's not a lot of people wanting to throw their money around in advertising, and which makes it, you know, a little bit harder for the industry. But there's always going to be a need for news. Absolutely. I guess stereotypes that are spot on. I think it's I kind of touched on it before. Journalists are always consuming news. So even like now, I'm on holiday, but you know, religiously every morning you check what's in the news, make sure you're on top of it. So when you get back to work, you're sort of not behind the eight ball, I guess. And it is very much a lifestyle. You check the news because you want to know the news. And that was the other thing about coming into journalism, which I enjoyed, is that you find the news out before anyone else in the world, which I've always found pretty amazing. So yeah, it's probably the biggest, you know, misconceptions.
Yeah, and that's spot on stereotype. Thank you for saying that about journalism too, because I think also quickly, misinformation and disinformation, I know that they're similar but distinct. For people who might not know the difference, how would you like separate mis versus disinformation?
So misinformation is they're both about spreading fake news. Misinformation is when you don't know that you're doing it. So for example, someone shares something online that you may not know to be true, and you share it as well. You don't know it's, you know, fake news, but you're doing it. That's misinformation. And disinformation is the spreading of fake news, you know, purposefully.
Like I'm in the States at the moment, and if anyone has been paying attention to the news or the US news, it's an election year. So there is a plethora of both mis and disinformation circulating. And like what you touched on there, Ben, is how religiously you check the news. Like I try to do that. And for listeners who maybe aren't doing it as a job, it's like, well, who do I trust? Where do I go? Because scrolling on Facebook or Instagram might come across things, but for me, it's like I try to get there's lots of different publications, and the New Zealand Herald will do it too, where it'll do like almost like a daily wrap up or a morning brew or something like that if you want to check that out. But it is important, I think, as members of the public to seek out reliable sources of news and truth. That's something we can actively do to try stop that spread of misinformation.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know it's, you know, not news isn't for everyone. No one wants to, not well, not everyone wants to sit down and read a newspaper or scroll through their phone for 5 minutes to read a story. It is very much a digital, you know, kind of world we're living in. And news platforms are having to kind of adapt to that. But it is important, you know. It's something that kind of affects everyone.
Being particularly like a young journalist, do you find like any biases maybe when you are trying to write a story or an article or reach out to people? Do you ever get hit with the, oh, you're a young fella in this? Does that happen?
I'm pretty fortunate that that kind of hasn't really happened to me. That is, it's kind of shifting. Like when I tell people I'm a journalist, they're like, "Oh, you're quite young for that." But there is quite a lot of, you know, younger people getting into the field. There's definitely a lot of older people as well that have sort of, you know, got 40, 50 years experience. But in terms of, you know, when I'm speaking to interviewees, I guess I've never come across a situation where they're uncomfortable to sort of speak to me because I'm a bit young. But yeah, I guess it's, you know, that you just sort of get around the people that have been there for a longer time and try and learn off them, and yeah, it's all good experience, eh?
No, thank you. I think that that's pretty special that you can be in a newsroom with people who have been doing it for decades and have potentially covered some pretty gnarly stories. And you're like, I mean, I mentioned interviewing Mark Leishman, who's
he's broadcasting, but then Mitch McCann, who's also reporter, journalist, broadcaster, and saying, like, you know, how do you step away sometimes when you are covering some pretty intense stuff as in your capacity as like a journalist? And then it's like, all right, what are we having for dinner? Like that, that swap between the day job, quote unquote, and then back to your normal life. Are you able to maintain like work and life boundaries, or do you find, given the nature of your work, they just blend together?
You do see a lot of stuff that's not so nice. So unfortunately, it's the thing is that negative headlines is what everyone reads. So that's a lot of what you know, news is. Unfortunately, with that, you do hear and see a lot of, you know, not so nice stuff, which, you know, you could take with you and think about, but you have to be pretty quick to switch it off, kind of thing, because it will sort of eat at your, you know, your personal life. So I sort of, how I do it is I kind of, you know, after work, I give myself the drive home to sort of debrief my day and unpack it and sort of move on, just so you're not sort of bringing that stuff home, I guess.
The sport experience you've got probably helps, right? Like after a game or sometimes even after a play. And I know that that sounds so superficial compared to the serious stories you're covering, but it's that similar technique and mind skill, right? Of like, I cannot stay in here, otherwise you will spiral and stay in it. It's like, I've got to, like you said, debrief, acknowledge it, and then move on. And I can imagine sometimes you might just have to circle the block a couple times before you park up because it takes a bit longer, but that's part of your process.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's very similar. You kind of just have to, you know, think about it quickly and flush it and, yeah, kind of move on. I guess it's horrible, but, you know, it's kind of, you can't get too emotionally attached to a story, or you're kind of going to think about it for, you know, the rest of the day or the rest of the week, or, and then it would, you know, it'll affect your personal life or the rest of your work life. And it's just, yeah, it's one of those things. It's kind of a skill that comes with the job that you just got to, you know, think about the next thing. And
yeah, and thank you. I appreciate that too, because I know that's a heavy topic question to delve into. So I appreciate your transparency on that one. Switching gears a bit, right, to what I do, and the crux purpose of this podcast is to talk about this question around tall poppy syndrome. And so without leading your answer, just very broadly, and there's no right or wrong definition, but how would you describe it? And then second to that, what's been your experience with tall poppy syndrome?
Yeah, for sure. So tall poppy syndrome to me is when someone's successful is, you know, criticized, essentially. For me, it's, I personally, well, you definitely, as a journalist, you definitely kind of encounter it on a day-to-day basis. You're always going to have emails or, you know, things on social media telling you, oh, that was a terrible story, or you shouldn't be a journalist and stuff like that. That's, I am not fussed with that stuff, because that's sort of just, you know, that kind of comes with the job. For me, my family has more experienced it through my brother's profession. So my brother is a professional rugby player, and I actually had the honor of writing about this not so long ago, like you said at the start. He made his debut for the Blues as a 19-year-old in 2019. Anyway, he missed a kick to win a game, and you know, sort of ever since that, he was criticised and received death threats and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I see tall poppy syndrome. You know, someone, a 19-year-old kid who had just achieved his life dreams, to be brought down by everyone kind of on social media. So I think that's a lot of where it stems from, for my family personally. We've always been huge about health, talking about our mental health and speaking about tall poppy syndrome. So for me to write about it and our family's sort of experiences with it was probably one of the hardest articles I've ever written, most personal for sure. but probably one of the most rewarding as well. Just to sort of show everyone kind of what's behind the curtain and the things you don't see on the outside, I guess.
And after you wrote it, because like I'll link it and stuff if people haven't read it, were you anticipating the response that it did garner?
If I'm being honest, this was a chat I had to have with my family. So we sat down and we pretty much said, I pretty much told them I've been given the opportunity to write about this. I obviously wasn't going to write about it if they weren't, you know, kind of comfortable with it. So it's something we sat down and talked about. We were expecting kind of a bit of backlash, I guess, but definitely wasn't expecting that amount of positive sort of feedback I got. And I think I received, you know, about 100 emails congratulating me and thanking me for writing it. And that was pretty cool. You know, my sole hope for writing it was, you know, so that it would resonate with at least one person, you know, a family member of a professional sports person, or a young kid that's kind of growing up playing sport and has received, you know, backlash for missing a kick or dropping a ball or something like that. Just to let them know that they're sort of not alone, and I guess some ways to kind of cope with it. Because like, it's, my family's been incredibly lucky. We have an amazing support network. You know, we've always had each other's backs. You know, some people might not have that, so it's kind of, you know, important to know what's out there, I guess, and to kind of tell people, I don't know, pull their heads in kind of thing, you know.
I love that you say you got like 100 or so emails and the messages, and like I said, my family sent it around to me, and this is like, this podcast I've been doing for the past 2 years, but it's a conversation that's been happening my whole life. So to see someone like you write about it and put it out there, I was like, oh, I feel like the culture is shifting, because and I'm going to praise young people, and I know it's probably all generations, but I feel like we've kind of had enough of the negative. It doesn't resonate, at least personally. I know we all have the ability to chop others down, and we do it more to ourselves, but as much as social media can be negative, because it does perpetuate and allow people to leave negative comments, I think it has shown us the ability to also hype each other up and to be inspired by what other people are doing. So, yeah, I guess what are your thoughts, observations on a bit of a culture shift happening, maybe versus even your parents' experience?
For sure. For me personally, I believe it's something that can never be defeated. Like, it's, you know, especially on social media, it's always going to be around. It's easy to make a Twitter account and, you know, bag someone and from behind a screen, you know. I think it is one of those things that, you know, with more awareness, people are becoming, I guess, well, yeah, more aware of it, to be honest. It's difficult, because like I said, it will always be around, but with people talking about it, it's the hope of, you know, oh, you know, this is actually people's lives, and they're doing their best, they're living to their sort of, you know, best life. And I guess there is a bit of a culture shift. A little bit maybe.
Yeah, we'll take it. And you mentioned briefly, right, about like the strong support system you've had. That's an easy way to help combat tall poppy syndrome, or the feelings of it and the negative. And those other ways you were talking about coping, for any of our listeners who are thinking like, okay, Ben, how do you and your family do it? Like, I know we can't necessarily give exact advice, but while you think of that, I know one for me with tall poppy is like, for me, I experience it in the fear of like, I don't want to put myself out there, because what if I get chopped down? And it sounds a bit existential, but ultimately, at the end of my life, it's only me who's going to reflect with me and be like, oh, I'm so glad I didn't try this thing because I was scared of like A, B, or C. No, I was like, I don't want to look back and think I held anything back out of fear for what others would say. So for you, and I guess your family, what's sort of something you channel to think about when you're putting yourself out there?
It is, like you said, you know, it's kind of like, I saw something a couple of days ago. It's like, you know, no one's going to remember what you did 500 years ago kind of thing. So, yeah. So, like I said, you know, my family, we've always been real close. We obviously, you know, talk about everything, and our parents have always been very supportive. They've been very encouraging, I guess, to for us to put ourselves out there, and no one's going to kind of remember if you've embarrassed yourself and or put yourself out there or things like that in 500 years. So you take it with a grain of salt. Like, it is obviously very scary for people who have never had to put themselves out there and are worried about backlash or people talking behind their backs and stuff like that. But it's definitely a mindset thing where you got to kind of tune it out, sort of just do you kind of thing. It's as cliche as it sounds.
Things are cliches for a reason. Like you say, talking things out with your family or whānau or support system, whoever that looks like for you. And then also, yeah, like not really minding. It's the whole, I don't agree with those that matter don't mind and mind don't matter, because I don't fully understand what matter is. Like, I need a definition of that phrase, so I'm going to disregard that one. But the one that I do align with is like, what other people think about me is none of my business, because if I want someone's opinion and they're in my circle and there's someone who wants the best for me, they want to celebrate success. That's part of the Tall Poppy mantra, I think, right? It's like celebrating other success. Yeah. If there are negatives or thoughts, that's okay. People are entitled to them. People are entitled to think your brother missed the kick. Okay. You don't need to tell him, because I'm sure he could, like, he already knows. He's a professional athlete. He's thinking about it. Let's keep it moving. Like, it's, or for you when you write a piece, there are some capacities where I'm sure you're like, okay, factually it's incorrect. I need to update it because the news is about accuracy, which you nail, by the way. There are moments when feedback is needed and it's collaborative and it's actually helpful. But my sort of thing is like, keep it to yourself and then celebrate when people are trying to do something great. And otherwise, just, yeah, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. I agree with that one too.
Yeah. No, and you're right. It's something I touched upon in my article, actually. It's you know, I'm not saying that constructive criticism isn't allowed. And these conversations absolutely need to happen, especially at a high, when you're talking about high performance sport. But it's the point where it gets to attacking someone's character, or, you know, kind of the death threats and the threats. It's like they're treated as not people kind of thing. And that's kind of my problem with it all.
Yeah, you talked about that too. And I think that's really relevant to actually emphasize for a second, or spotlight, is like, if we start treating these people who are, for lack of a better word, on a pedestal, right? If they want to be professional athletes or authors or journalists or podcasters or whatever it may be, yes, you are opening yourself up to public attention and you are exposed, but they're still people, and you've still got to factor that in. Because when you deliver something, especially when it is like keyboard warrior-esque, it does hurt, because that is a person receiving the information. So I think that's a really important call out, is like, you can have that constructive feedback, but let's still remember that they're a person who has to like get up and try again tomorrow and put themselves back up there. I think it's remembering the humanness of all of it.
Exactly. And you know, they go through the exact same things as everyone else, you know, the breakups, the everyday life, the people that, too.
Yeah, I like that very much. Now, selfishly, so this is a very much Grace wanted question, looking at, like, you're in a competitive field that is journalism, especially like in New Zealand in particular. When you do reflect on kind of that journey into becoming working at New Zealand Herald, of what the future might hold, what are the parts of your job personally that you find like the most rewarding, the most exciting? Like, I just want to know, because it's a field I wish I was in.
Yeah, no, completely fair. I feel like you know, anytime you publish an article, it's pretty rewarding. Kind of seeing your name in the paper, I guess. I'm fortunate enough to, in my 2 years, a little bit over 2 years experience, I've been real fortunate to, you know, ensure positive difference, I guess, in people's lives. And that's something I take real pride in, is to see, you know, how my articles have positively affected, I guess, families, whether it be raising awareness around a fundraiser page or something like that, to individuals highlighting their kind of successes, I guess. So my thing when I started journalism was I always wanted to, you know, make a positive change in a world full of negative headlines. And I feel like I've definitely been blessed with that, because, you know, what person doesn't want to make someone else feel good or make someone else smile or something like that? But like you said, it's, you know, it's every day is very different, and you take it with a grain of salt, because for every good day you have, you know, three or four bad days with writing really negative stories. So you kind of gotta take it as you come, and every time you see your name in a paper or see a photo up online, it's, you know, it's pretty rewarding.
Yeah, and like what's unique too, I think, in your job is, like, for a lot of people, if they are the story you're writing about, like, that's a big thing. They're gonna be like, oh, 2024, the year Ben wrote about me in the Herald, right? But for you, it's just another day. And so something that potentially you won't recognize but is blaring to me is, like, you are a high performer, and that's why I am just so grateful to get you on the podcast and talk about it, because what you do is high performance, and it's in an area that we don't typically dive into. So thank you for what you're doing, because you could probably be doing a lot of various things. So I'm grateful you're on the right side of the newsroom. And then looking ahead, like, I know we're early days, you're only 2 years in. When you do think about, like, long term, because you're very happy and you're doing great at the Herald, if there was, like, a job or a, like, event you could cover, I don't know if I'm thinking Olympics, World Cup, like, a person, is there some that you, like, daydream, like, oh, I'd love to cover A, B, or C?
Yeah, no, you hit it right on the head there. I've always wanted to go to the Olympics, to, you know, sort of experience that and write about it. Would be my biggest dream, specifically living in New Zealand. But I think the good thing about journalism is, you know, there's an English speaking newspaper in every country in the world. So you can go to any country and sort of apply your trade, which I find pretty cool. So if it be stay in New Zealand in the next 5 years or look to go overseas, I'm not too sure yet. But yeah, I think any time you're part of a national newspaper, and then you're doing pretty well. So yeah, I'm not too sure what the future holds. I would love to go to the Olympics.
Yeah, and you don't need to know. Like, my little preach I give is, when you're open to pivot and open to opportunity, because if you've set, you want goals, I appreciate that, but when you're too set and rigid on them, sometimes you don't allow yourself to look out of the boat. Although if you're a rower, keep your head in the boat, but you don't allow yourself to look out and be like, oh, maybe I do want to pursue that. And I'm just saying, Ben, 2028 Olympics is in LA, and there's cricket,
yeah,
there's all these sports where Kiwis dominate, so maybe line yourself up to cover cricket or something.
Yeah.
that could be it. Oh, epic. Now, my sign-off question is very important to understand more about your personality. If you had to listen to just one musical artist for the rest of your life, who's it going to be?
Oh, that's a great question. I'm different to most people. I'm a country boy, so I'm big into country music. I'm a big Zach Bryan fan, and Tyler Childers.
I don't know Them, are they a band?
Nah, so they're two different artists.
I know
So
Zach Bryan, but I don't know the second one.
Tyler Childers, yeah. So he's another country singer. Yeah, no, I'm big into country, so I guess any country artist really. Close. It's a bit of a cop out.
No, that we've bonded because I enjoy country music. So here's what's going to happen: 2028, you'll cover the Olympics and then go to Nashville afterwards to post game the Olympics and enjoy some country music.
Done. Absolutely, I'm on board.
Perfect. And then you can come crash up in New York where I am. Look, Ben, this is his debut podcast and he's absolutely smashed it, obviously. Thank you so much sincerely for not just being on the podcast, but the things you write about, what you cover. It's been a real like treat for me to have you on Tall Poppy Talk today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And it's been a massive honor and it's awesome what you do. Really appreciate it. So keep up the good work and hope to be back one day.
Thank you so much for listening to Tall Poppy Talk. We'll see you next time. Feel free to check us out on socials, YouTube, and the website. Thanks for today's